This is Pearls and Swine on Good News You Can Use. I'm Levi. With me is Travis and Miss Lisa. And today we are going to be just chatting a little bit about life and kind of how things work. And so the question I have for you today is, when life feels heavy, confusing, lacking clarity, what's your natural instinct? Is it to fix it, to avoid it, or to talk about it with God?
My tendency is to go into fix it mode. Like, there's a problem. First, I want to take a nap. I get real worn out, fatigued, and I'm like, I take a nap and then go into fix it mode. Like Builder Bob.
Yeah. I think the order is exactly what you just said. First, I try to fix it. And then when I realize I can't fix it, then I avoid it. No, I don't. I just keep trying to fix it until I have to pray about it.
Okay.
Not really an avoider.
Okay. Yeah, I think we have those natural tendencies that we just go, like, we can get this thing done. We can fix it. We can make it happen on our own. The story that is in 1 Samuel is a story of really a mess, a family mess, and there's not really an easy way to fix it. And it's kind of this broken man, broken family, and his name is Elkanah, and there's this woman named Hannah, which is, what is it when you can spell something backwards and forward?
Palindrome?
Yeah, her name's a palindrome. Yeah, pretty fancy. And there's this whole lot of pain in this story. And then there's this other woman in this picture that really makes it complicated. And so what you see in this story is you got to have a little backdrop of the story. The story goes, basically, the book of Judges is before it, and the book of Judges is just God trying to provide some guidance for the people, but it goes in a secular pattern. Like, the first generation is like, yeah, we're all in with God. There's going to be no other God before you. Second generation kind of fades a little bit. The third generation goes hog wild crazy, and then God provides a deliverer, people like Samson, Deborah would be another judge that he provides, and they bring the people back to God. And so we're in the kind of the third cycle, and there's this really broken family, and there's this guy who has actually two wives, and he is trying to kind of figure out how to live not with just one, but with two. And it's really kind of tumultuous in the relationship. The other wife is Peninnah, and which means pearl in Hebrew. And so he takes this wife on after his wife Hannah is unable to conceive. And so Jewish tradition says it's like 10 years, something like that, where he takes this wife on. So they try for 10 years, can't have a child. And now we're like 10 years removed, and they're heading up to this festival. There's this really cool festival that they have, and everyone is like joyous, having a great time. And then the problem comes in, and they would go there to make this sacrifice, but it was really just this big, huge party. And it was to represent how God really has helped them in the middle of this thing. And so they're there, and in 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse 8, does someone want to read that?
And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Hannah, why do you weep, and why do you not eat, and why is your heart sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons?"
So the reason why she's crying is she doesn't have a child. But the verse above it tells her rival, which is the other wife, wife number two, just kept provoking her and kept just messing with her. She's like mean to her. And so much so that Hannah begins to weep, and she wouldn't eat, even though it's like this big festival, big party, great time for everyone. And so she won't eat, and then the husband says that, like, am I not,
right?
am I not, greater than 10 sons? Like,
no, it's not. Read the room, man.
Yeah. Well, you kind of go like, dude, do you really want her to answer that? Because the answer is
in
no.
In this moment, you are not better than right. 10 sons.
Yeah. And so that doesn't solve the problem. And so in verse 9, it says, once when they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now, Eli, the priest, was sitting on a chair by the doorpost of the Lord's house. And so they're in Shiloh, which is where the tabernacle, where the very like presence of God was held. And she gets up and she goes over. She's so disheartened, so broken by this. And then in verse 10, if one of you want to read that, is this really emotional moment for her.
Yep, verse 10. In her deep anguish, Hannah prayed to the Lord, weeping bitterly. And she made a vow, saying, Lord Almighty, if you will only look on your servant's misery and remember me, and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head.
So, in that verse, in her deep anguish, Hannah prayed to the Lord, weeping bitterly. Hannah's broken. She's in pain. Hannah, I think, is kind of probably confused. I mean, she's probably been going up to that same festival, praying the same prayers, and God's really just not answering her how she's desiring. She's confused. And I think it's a really interesting place to be, where she's at, in the middle of pain, in the middle of this situation, in the middle of where there's no real clarity. And what does she do? She gets up, and she goes toward God. I think that's just a fascinating portion of her faithfulness. Her next right step wasn't away from God, because I think we often, when that happens, we go, I'm out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it also indicates, you've said that they're in the middle, that the children of Israel are at a time in the cyclical nature of their turning away and following God. Like, they're in the third cycle, which means they're going crazy, right? They're yeah. away from God. So her response also indicates that she's not like many of the people in her community. Like, she's different in a way that she understands that God is the answer to whatever the confusion is that she has, that may not be the way that everybody else around her, including Eli, as we may see in a moment, doesn't seem to understand. She understands that God is her help and refuge in a way that perhaps other people don't.
Yeah. Well, 20 years, like, I'm thinking, like, how old is she at this point? If the Jewish tradition is correct, and they've been married for like 20 years, and she's, you know, even if she got married at
15,
16.
Yeah.
She's 35, 36 years old, which even in our day, that's a geriatric pregnancy.
Yep.
She's kind of old at this point to be having children, and yet she's still praying this and still going and turning to God, going, man, this is a mess. I don't want to be in this space. I don't want to be in this place, but I'm coming to you in the middle of the mess. And I wonder, you know, we said all of us, when there's a struggle, what do we do first? We try to fix it. And then we try to fix it some more. And then we maybe take a nap. And then...
And then our fixing messes things up.
And then our fixing messes things up. It's a while before we step into taking the next right step. And I wonder why that is.
I think that maybe for me, it's because I truly do think I can fix it. Like, I I think that I have more power than I do in situation. I mean, that's just my response, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's like, it's easier for us to view that we've got control over it. And sometimes for myself, it's because I made the mess that I'm in to begin with. And it's like, well, I got myself into this. I guess I got to get myself out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's her response in the middle. Like, it's a meltdown prayer. It's not like, yeah, it's like bitterly praying is not usually used in the Bible. She's just like melting down at this point. She's crying. She's not eating. You know, her husband is kind of a doofus. And she goes to the place where the very presence of God is represented and goes, this is what's going on. This is the mess. And there's this priest named Eli there, and he sees her praying. And it tells us in the next verses that her mouth is moving, but words are not actually coming out. And so Eli thinks that she's had too much fun at the festival. She's had too much, wine or beer. And she corrects that in verse 15 as he asks her, how long are you going to stay drunk? Put away your wine is what he says. And she says, no, not so, my Lord. Hannah replied, I'm a woman who's deeply troubled. I have not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of my great anguish and grief. And so Eli goes, go in peace and may God of Israel grant you what you have asked. And then the next verse, she said, may your servant find favor in your eyes. And she went away and she ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. What's interesting is the circumstance has not changed. She doesn't have a child. She still has a sister wife who's mean. What changed?
Well, I mean, she believed that Eli's word to her was the word of God. And because she believed that God was faithful, she could count. And the funny thing about the story to me, too, though, is that Eli, it's not like Eli's checking with God, right? You don't get any sense from the story that Eli's like, oh, okay. It's like he's backtracking in his embarrassment. And he's like, okay, you do your thing, lady. God will give you what you need. And she takes that. I always read it as a very flippant response. She takes that as the hope from God to her. And then she counts on it. Like, she's like, okay, this is what God said. I'm going to do it. I'm going to live in that reality.
Yeah. I think something about not wanting to be in that space and in the mess and in this place, that she's already downloaded everything to God.
Mm-hmm.
Because she doesn't go to Eli first. She goes to God. She goes directly to him and says, here's where I'm at in the middle of this mess. And then verse 19 and 20, Travis, you want to read that?
Yep. Early in the morning, they arose and worshiped before the Lord and then went back to their home at Ramah. Elkanah made love to his wife Hannah, and the Lord remembered her. So in the course of time, Hannah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel, saying, because I asked the Lord for him.
So she's probably approaching 40 at this time. And she made a vow in the middle of her angst, in the middle of her pain. She said, God, I'm going to give this child back to you if you give me this child. And God answers her prayer in the middle of this mess. And the next year, they're to go up and to offer their usual annual sacrifice, go to the party, enjoy themselves. Hannah doesn't go. She stays. And she's like, no, I'm not going to go until Samuel is weaned, which in Jewish culture is like 3 years old. And then I'll come with you. And the rest of that story is, I mean, really kind of crazy. She brings him when he's like 3 years old to the temple. And, or not to the temple, to the tabernacle. And can you imagine that? Like, okay, he's three. Okay, I said this. I'm going to trust God. Even in this, he gave me this child and I'm going to give him back. And he's 3 years old, and I'm going to leave him for someone else to raise.
Someone else who very publicly is known as not a great dad.
Right. Yeah, yeah, right. Because Eli's sons are bad.
Not a great dad.
Yeah. Right. And so she goes there, and then verse 26, it says, it's basically like she says, hey, Eli, do you remember me? And she said to him, pardon me, my lord, as surely as you live, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord for his whole life. He will be given over to the Lord. And he worshiped the Lord there. And she leaves the kid. She leaves Samuel there for his whole life to be a priest in training. And Hannah and Elkanah leave. It doesn't tell us, but I wonder. I just wonder this. Because she's human. Like, did she have a stiff upper lip as she's, like, walking back to their house? Or were there just tears just rolling down her face? Because she's going to see this kid once a year. Once a year. That's it.
Yeah, I can't imagine that decision. But the next chapter is a remarkable testament to her belief that God is the one who fixes the things and that he is faithful. And so, I don't know, I'm always struck by her, by the story, because I really think she believes that God does what he says he's going to do.
The little kid is like left there, and like, I can imagine in this little priest outfit. In the other chapters, it tells us that people like really liked him, and he grew in favor of the people. And he's going to become a prophet for them. And at the end of his life, he grows up. And at age 12, it tells us that he hears the very voice of God. And all through his life, there's this like next right step for him. Next right step. Faithfulness, faithfulness, faithfulness. And I think his life starts, even before his conception, it starts with the next right step through his mom. Through her faithfulness, and it follows him his whole life. He dies as an old man, and it tells us that all of Israel wept. They were sad to see him go because he had that much of an impact on them. And it all came from his mom really crying out to God in the middle of a mess, in the middle of this place where she couldn't solve the issue. She begins to cry out and begins to ask for God to do something in this. And the story that I think is so interesting, it doesn't start with clarity. She does not know that this is going to happen. It only starts with obedience. She just goes, man, I know he's the one who can solve this. I know I don't like this space. I don't want to be in this space. But I will trust you, God. That's a very different posture than I think I often take.
Yeah. I mean, she was clear about one thing. Two, she's clear about who she understands God to be. And she's clear about what she knows she needs to do. And that's, to me, I mean, I guess that's where the obedience and trust looks like clarity, even in the middle of not clarity. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She is clear about something.
Well, what if God like actually operates like that? Like in the middle of our mess, in the middle of the space we do not want to be in, he is willing to step in and do something amazing, something that is unspeakably wrong. And I think that was for her. It was unspeakably wrong that her husband had to take on another wife for them to have children, because in their culture, women couldn't inherit land. You had to have a son. And so she agrees to this, but it's really painful for her. But what if God just does this? And it seems consistent with the scripture. You look at Joseph and the story of him, not the one who is the earthly father of Jesus, but the one in the Old Testament, he's got a bunch of brothers. He's like 17 years old, and they're his half-brothers. They hate him. He's kind of a jackalope. They hate him, and so they sell him to these merchants, and he goes to Egypt, and he rises up, and then he's in jail, and then he gets out of jail, and then he goes back to jail, And it's this really long time that he's there until he gets to this place where he is second in command. Famine hits the land. Everyone around is starving, but Egypt had grain. They had it because he understood what was going to happen, and they had these big storehouses. And his brothers come, and they figure out who he is. I love this story. And he kind of messes with them for a little bit, but then they think he's going to take vengeance on them. And what does he say at the end of that? He says, "What you meant for evil, God meant for good." I mean, it's the story of Easter, right? God comes in the person of Jesus, God in the bod, God in the flesh. And all of his disciples are like, this is awesome. We're like rock stars, you know, cruising around. Jesus is performing miracle, feeding 5,000, raising people from the dead, healing the blind, healing the sick, doing all of those things. And people, they're getting notoriety wherever they go. And all of a sudden he goes to a cross and dies. And you're like, what in the world? And all hope is lost for them. They don't even know the hope that Jesus is going to bring, because 3 days later he rises from the grave. And all of the world changes in that moment. All of our sin put on him on the cross, the one who is perfect, the blood that was shed for us so we could have a relationship with God in that moment. But it was really horrible. It was a really terrible. It was in the middle of bitterness. It's the middle of anguish. It's the middle of, like, they left their jobs, the disciples, to follow Jesus. And all of a sudden you're going, man, I don't know what God's doing here. And he does something incredible. What if he absolutely works like that?
I mean, I'm pretty sure he does. But the question that I have is, why do you think it's so hard for us to take the next right step? Like, knowing that that's how God operates, knowing that he does show up. And why do you think, why is it that Samuel, I mean, the story of Hannah and then Samuel's life, as we're going to see, I imagine, through the series, is that he's a man who takes the next right step to the end, right?
Yeah, I think, for me, I think the hardest part is because we don't have clarity. And we want clarity. I don't know. I had a Franklin planner. Did you guys have Franklin?
Yeah.
I like to know what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Now I use Google Calendar. I like to know my task list. I like to know everything, the steps I have to do in order to accomplish what I need to accomplish. And often that is not how God works. He just says, you're responsible for the next right step. And I think that is very, very difficult for us. And I think that's where the tension comes in, is just taking the next right step. What do you think, Travis?
I was thinking of when Jesus calls the disciples out. Like, they left everything, didn't know what the next step was beyond the first right step. But, like, that's just how, like Lisa, you said, God continues to operate that way. And it comes back to the story of Hannah, the story of Samuel, the story of Joseph. It's that faithful obedience. And it's that offering of your heart and your life as a sacrifice to walk with your Lord. And I think God blesses that as we do that. But the same thing, I was thinking of not clarity, but just like confirmation. Like, we want those significant signifiers that are like, this is what you have to do, instead of, like, the flashlight that God's holding on our path is like right at our feet. Here's your next step. Mm-hmm. We want it, the beam just shifted forward a little bit more so we can see more clearly. But God's like, no, it's faith. You got to trust me. You got to know that I've done all these things throughout history. And just put your faith and your trust and your hope in me, and it's going to be fine. It's going to knock your socks off fine.
Yeah, I think, though, in the moment is we don't know if it's going to be right. Fine. But yeah. I think that's the beauty of it, is you don't have to pretend that it's fine. God's not asking for a polished version of your story. He's inviting you to trust him with the real one, the messy one, the tear-streaked, prayer whispered, I don't understand what in the world you're doing version. And I think that's where the faith comes in, mm-hmm. because that's where I think also our faith is forged. Not when the answers are obvious, but when the next right step feels costly. That's where Hannah was. That's where she met God. That's where Joseph was formed. That's where Samuel was born. That's where Jesus met us on a cross, and no one saw coming. And maybe that's where God wants to meet you today. And not with clarity, but with himself. So if you're in that place of lack of clarity, don't run from God, run to God. Take the next right step, even if it's small, even if it's just a whispered prayer through tears, because that's a step of faith. It might be the beginning of the story that God is waiting to write. That is good news you can use.
Thanks for tuning in with us this week. If you've got questions or comments, we would love to hear from you. Email those to travis@evangelup.org. If you'd like to catch up on any of our previous Pearls and Swine episodes here on Good News You Can Use, just search Evangel Houghton on your preferred podcast platform or go to evangelup.org.